committees went, I think, on study tours abroad. Others went on oversight. Others were around on bills and so forth. We could not meet for the previous 2 weeks because of the challenge of the quorum. Even though in some instances we did not need a quorum, but at least we needed the reasonable attendance so that we don't demoralize the people who were to come and make presentations to us. So we felt we should postpone, especially the Human Science Research Council and also the Empowered Dex briefing. We would like to appreciate the fact that Empowered Dex did understand our predicament, and they agreed to come back today and brief us on the progress regarding the BBBE and local procurement. This is to us very important if we want to also to track as to how far have we gone since the very same concept of BBBE started to date, whether we're going forward or backward, what should we be looking at for us to really make sure that we foster progress if there is no progress in this regard. Let me, with those few words, welcome you back and hope that you did find some time to rest during, even though you were very hectic in terms of your program. I hope that we will continue with the same vigor that we ended with before recess, with the hope of ensuring that we hold those in authority, especially the implementers of the various legislation and policies that we are overseeing. we make sure that we hold them to account. We have here Mr. Duncan de Groot, who is going to be giving us a presentation on behalf of Empowered Dex. He is a regional executive in the Western Cape. And then following that would be the draft program that we're going to be, Thando is going to brief us on. We understand that it's going to change because the parliamentary program also keeps on changing. It's just for members to have an idea of what's on the program, so that when you call them, they understand why we're calling you. We're hoping that as time goes on, after the Parliament's program has been authenticized, we'll be able also to adopt ours. let me, without a waste of time, hand over to Mr. Duncan. But before that, let me introduce you to our members. My name is Matulara Coleman, the chairperson of the committee. I'll start at my far right, I think, yeah, if I were to face this way. Mr. Kwabaza is the member of the committee, followed by Mr. Mabasa, followed by Mem van der Merwe, followed by Mr. Ntuli, who's also the whip of the committee. And then again, the next row, the extreme line, yes, on the line, the extreme of the line is the young, the last born of the committee, Mr. Lengwa. And then we have Mr. Mupu, and then followed by Mr. Hussein. Those are members of the committee. And then we have the whip secretary. And then next to me here, ladies, that actually protect, seem to be protecting me here in front. We have the researcher of the committee, Ms. Belegani, and then the secretary of the committee, Ms. Kaka. Yeah. That is the committee as a whole. There are members who, of course, are not here, who will be, others will be joining us late. We have also, I guess, a lady from Telkom with us. I did not meet you, ma'am. Can you introduce yourself?
Bridget Mutala from Economic Development.
Bridget. Okay. The PLO. What are you doing in the economic development again?
I'm in the social dialogue unit.
Okay, I know we have PMG here. We have our committee assistant, Mr. Dodo. Yes, that is the delegation from the committee, actually the whole committee. May I hand over, I don't know who's at the back, are those your colleagues? I'm not sure. Can we introduce ourselves so that you can know who's here? Please use the mic next to you.
I'm Baba Kogule from Economic Development in the Policy Branch.
Andrew Macheke from Economic Development, Economic Policy Branch.
Good morning, my name is Alexei Chitkov. I'm from the Russian consulate, dealing with the economics as well.
From which consulate?
The Russian one.
Russia. 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 Okay. Spasiba.
Anita Valias, consultant to CESL.
Thank you very much. Now that we know who's here, may we hand over to you, Duncan. Thank you.
Many thanks, and thanks for the invitation to address the Portfolio Committee. Just to introduce myself, my name is Duncan de Kroet. I am the Regional Executive of Impaldex in the Western Cape and have been running the Western Cape branch since 2009. The presentation has been put together in consultation with direct input from our Chairman, Vuyo Jack, our Managing Director, Lerato Ratsoma, and the manager of our advisory and research department, Mr. Stephen Hawes. I'll take us through the briefing, and if there are any questions as we go along, please feel free to ask, and I'll give you the input as best I can.
We normally prefer that you give the presentation, full presentation, and then we ask questions
ourselves. Thank you. The brief for this presentation was to give Impaldex's opinion and view as to the status and impact of black economic empowerment in South Africa, as well as black economic empowerment and local procurement, specifically to what extent has local procurement empowered black people, women, and youth in the country, how widespread is fronting, and how can legislation be tightened in this regard, where are the loopholes? Compliance with the BE scorecard and its implications for local procurement, an overview of all the sector charters and how they advance the BE and local procurement objectives, and any other related issues or positive and negative experiences with black economic empowerment. I'll start off by just providing a little bit of a background as to what we shall cover. And the specific focus of this presentation has been on the local procurement component of black economic empowerment and how the codes of good practice, how those specific codes at present take local procurement into account and how local procurement within the existing codes is measured. So local procurement in this instance is essentially procurement from local or indigenous sources. What we have seen is that we've seen an increasing focus on on local procurement over the course of the last 6 to 9 months, where different departments and different legislation has brought into play local content, which in the Code of Good Practice as promulgated in 2007 didn't specifically relate to local content within its procurement part, within its procurement element. We've seen this focus in as part of the new growth path, as well as accompanying local procurement of court. Focus has been compounded by aspects of local procurement and the designation of specific sectors and sub-sectors in the PPPF Act that took possession in December 2011. There has been an SABS technical standard on the calculation of local content in domestic products, and it is currently being refined, and we'll get more onto that measurement, that technical standard, later in the presentation. We're seeing an increasing amount of focus on local content as a measurement within the Renewable Energy Independent Power Producer Program that is currently on the go, and Empowerix specifically has been very involved in a number of those companies who are tendering for those independent power producer programs, specifically on the measurements, and specifically there is a requirement within that there is quarterly reporting, and one of the specific instances of those is measurement of local content. So we're getting increasingly involved in that. The challenge within that is how to measure local content. As I mentioned previously, the current BE regulations, although there is some focus on local content within the procurement element, does not specifically focus on local content. You can currently get a rating for preferential procurement without specifically producing anything locally, the way the code stands at the moment, and still score compliant from a procurement perspective without necessarily producing anything locally. Okay. The status and the impact of broad-based black economic empowerment in South Africa. Empowerix has been measuring the implementation of broad-based black economic empowerment since its inception. We've been in existence for just over 10 years and have been measuring the since then. We've measured thousands of companies across all industries and across all sizes. A snapshot of where we are at the moment, and this is purely from the JSE. So performance of the JSE as in 2012, the top 100 performers. What we've given here is we've given an average score. It's a scorecard counting out of 100. Although there's a compliance rate of just over 80% from an ownership perspective, our calculations place the actual black ownership somewhere in the region of 8 to 12% ownership on the JSE. That does not take into account that black ownership that resides within pension funds and other mandated investments, which is an ongoing topic. The key points on this particular snapshot is that the data represents the top 100 BE performers, and that the average compliance is just over 75 points, which will make them currently a level 3 contributor to black economic empowerment. What we can see from those is that all of the weakest elements are linked to the human resources elements, specifically management, employment equity, and skills development. We feel that this is unusual, as employment equity legislation has been in place since the late 1990s. But the figures show that management, employment equity, and skills development, which are measurements directly targeted at employees, are the weakest compliance targets. Preferential procurement and enterprise development are the third and the second highest performers, respectively, and socioeconomic development is the highest performer, and it is also the easiest one to be compliant with. key points from this is that the VTI is currently doing a second baseline study on broad-based black economic empowerment in the South African economy. The first baseline was completed in 2007. However, despite this, it is still difficult to measure the impact of broad-based black economic empowerment compliance, specifically on economic development. What we also know, and we see it on an ongoing basis, is that the large corporates and the larger companies are highly focused on broad-based black economic empowerment and specifically on the compliance aspect of it, which does lead to a positive bias in the figures that are presented, because the figures that are being represented are those who are willing and are compliant, and it is a business imperative from them. Smaller and unlisted businesses are more difficult to get information from. Naturally, we can get information from our own database, but that database is naturally a small subset of the entire population of companies being verified, therefore leading to a positive bias in those figures. How is broad-based black economic empowerment related to local procurement? And how is the problem? What is the problem with fronting? Is there a problem with fronting? In order to explain the local procurement aspect, it's important first just to outline how the procurement calculation is currently measured. And what we do is we measure it off a base that's known as your total measured procurement spend. Your total measured procurement spend is, in essence, the cost of operating your business, and fundamentally that takes into account your cost of sales, your operating expenses, your finance costs, and your capital expenditure. So all the money that you physically spend in the course of a year, and it's measured on an annual basis, it's measured on a financial period. So all the money that you physically spend operating your business, and then we exclude certain items, certain allowable exclusions. Principle in them, book entries such as depreciation, salaries and wages, certain taxes and levies, monopolistic procurement, although we are finding that a lot of state-owned enterprises are now having themselves rated and on the whole have positive ratings, as well as direct imports, where there is no local production of that. This provides what's known as a total measurable procurement spend, and from that we measure four sub-elements. One is procurement from all suppliers, which is the bulk of the points at the moment, 12 out of the 20 points available for the procurement score. Three of the 12 are on what's known as qualifying small enterprises or exempt micro-enterprises, which are the smaller companies, and then another 5 points split between those companies that are 50% black-owned and 50% black woman-owned. 50% black-owned currently counts for 3 out of the 20 points on the procurement element. And 30% black woman-owned counts for 2 points out of the 20. So if we look at the 50% black-owned and the 30% black woman-owned, which are the two elements that could talk to local content, those count for 5 points out of the total of 100 for the scorecard. However, what 50% black woman owned and 50% black owned and 30% black woman owned doesn't imply is that those suppliers necessarily do produce locally. They can merely be a third party. They can merely be an intermediary between other suppliers and the measured entity. So we're able to determine that there is black ownership within it, but we aren't able to necessarily define, because all we do is we take the certificate of that supplier, how that particular black-owned company or black 30% black woman-owned company actually has any local content aspects towards their rating. So if we look at the point system in the code, as I briefly outlined, 20 points available for procurement, What we have found is that procurement from small enterprises is largely local, although it is difficult to determine whether those local entities are indeed merely distributors of imported goods. If they're solely an importer of imported goods, they're able to exclude that entire import section of their total measured procurement spend, and they could be a compliant producer merely from the fact of that, merely from their operating expenditure, which could be stationary and rental and the like, which doesn't necessarily define that they've had any local content portion of their procurement. We find a similar situation in respect of procurement from 50% black-owned and 30% black women-owned enterprises, as mentioned, that they don't necessarily need, at the moment, the way the codes are devised and measured, they're not necessarily producers in their own rights, but can, I'm not saying they aren't, I'm saying they can just be intermediaries as well and be a compliant and get points for preferential procurement. What we also have found is that largely the scoring in these elements is driven by outsourcing of services, which are locally produced, rather than a focus from the measured entity themselves on their own particular local content procurements. There is an incentive within the procurement element that provides enhanced recognition for procurement from one of your own enterprise development beneficiaries. So there is an incentive currently built into the code that says if you have an enterprise development beneficiary and you procure from that enterprise development beneficiary, you will get enhanced recognition, and currently that is at 1.2 times your procurement. What impact has this had? There is little data to support the notion that increased scoring in the procurement element of broad-based black economic empowerment has increased the levels of local procurement. What we have found is that, on the whole, procurement has improved over the years, and we tend to find that the score for a measured entity for procurement does consistently rise. It's the exception when we see a procurement score falling, which means that the underlying suppliers, the only way that procurement score can improve is that the underlying suppliers' ratings have improved in their own rights. So certainly we feel that the procurement element is giving an indication to us that broad-based black economic empowerment is having an effect, and we feel that there is certainly consideration being given from underlying companies on how they operate themselves and on how they become compliant towards broad-based black economic empowerment. However, what we do find is that although the underlying score in most measured entities improves, and we exclude here where a company is changing from a small company's measurement to a large company's measurement, what's known as a qualifying small enterprise, to a generic rating, we do tend to find the score drops in those instances, but that's because of the complexity of being measured as far as a larger company is concerned. If we're looking like for like, we are finding that the scores are improving. But what we don't find is that there's a correlation between that improvement in the underlying BE scorecard and economic growth within the country. And likewise with an increase in those human resources categories within the BE scorecard. We also feel that there is a possibility that more small businesses are supplying goods and services due to the incentive on the scorecard, because the larger entities are incentivized from a measurement perspective to recognize procurement through those smaller businesses, but there's no empirical data to support this as yet. To touch on fronting, fronting is difficult to detect in that what we do as a verification agency, and as do all verification agencies, is we take into account and we measure the legal status and the legal ownership within a company. And we do that using underlying data and the documentation with regards to the legal status and the ownership within that company. Normally, what we find is that that fronting takes the form of subcontracting to non-BE compliant companies by entities that win business in the private and public sector. We've also found that there's a tendency for black BE partners to get into contracts that are not to their advantage with severe limitations on the economic benefit that accrues to them. But that is even more difficult to label as fronting, as normally there is an agreement between the two parties, and there would be an arm's length business agreement between the parties. There is also a lack of will for fronting to be actively reported by BE verification agencies, as the allegations are certainly grave, and they are not easily proved, especially where contracts are involved. We were asked to give an overview as to the sector charters and how these advance support-based black economic empowerment and local procurement objectives. Are there any real differences between the charters and the codes of good practice? The process for a sector code to be gazetted is that an industry body, industry will get together and will divide and will determine and devise a charter that is relevant to their industry and takes into account those aspects that are of importance to that industry. Once that has been, once the industry has worked on it, it gets sent to the Department of Trade and Industry, where it ultimately gets gazetted via the Department of Trade and Industry. And the DTI's role is to ensure that those sector codes meet the broad guidelines and basis of the codes of good practice. So what we have found is that almost exclusively the sector codes very, very, very closely resemble the codes of good practice. In some instances, they are almost exactly the same, save for one or two small aspects. And the general difference is we have this concept called the adjusted recognition for gender within the codes of good practice, and what we have found is that the sector codes split that out. And they don't do the adjustment for gender, but they rather give a true measurement to the black female representation within an element. But on the whole, the codes are a very, very close approximation as a broad rule of the codes of good practice. So as far as differences are concerned, there are very few differences, real differences. I'm not saying there aren't. There are certain charters and I think specifically of construction, where there is a specific focus on enterprise development and programs for mentorships and the likes of enterprise development. But other sector codes are very close to the codes of good practice. As we stand, as of today, the following sector codes have been gazetted under Section 9.1. The ICT charter, ICT sector code, the property, chartered accountancy, transport, forestry, construction, and tourism. Transport, forestry, construction, and tourism were gazetted in 2009. ICT, property, and chartered accountancy have been gazetted within the last year. The following sector charters have been gazetted: financial sector, agriculture, and marketing, advertising, and communications. As I've mentioned, given that the chartered codes are required to explain any deviations from the generic codes, there is little differentiation in this regard in all sector charters and codes. They very closely resemble the codes of good practice. And this indicates that the role players find the current procurement mechanisms to be palatable to them. As the codes are new, there is very limited data available on performance in these sectors, as most of the due to the newness of these codes. Sector charter and sector code counters will be the primary source of this data. what we have found in the codes that we have, in the sector codes that we have rated companies on, is that they very closely resemble the score that they had via the codes of good practice, which bears out the assertion that that the sector codes very closely resemble the codes of good practice. What are our general experiences with regards to broad-based black economic empowerment, and what are our recommendations as to what has worked and what has failed? There certainly has been a creation of a larger middle class of increasingly diverse racial composition, and we feel that this directly ties into to the assertion that on the whole, measured entities ratings have increased, which means they are placing focus and consideration on who they hire, who they train, who they promote throughout their ranks, who they procure from, which businesses they support, which socioeconomic development initiatives they support. So we feel that the codes have certainly assisted in bringing more people into the formal economy. And we can see this through the general increase in the score. Shows that, that there is a consideration. We do see a creation of increased, if still limited, diversity in the workplace. What we are certainly finding, if we look at the employment equity component and we look at a larger company, a company over 35 million rand, one of the measurements that we measure is junior management, so those people who are skilled professionals, academically qualified, junior management, superintendents, foremen, and the likes, is that the compliance within that level is improving. And likewise, we're seeing that move into management, into middle management, and still quite slow at senior management level, which means that it is working, and it's working from the bottom up, but it is slow. There are within the codes incentivized creation of initiatives to support small businesses. We can see this within the procurement element, that the qualifying small enterprise and exempt market enterprise procurement scores generally are good, improving and good, i.e. procurement to those companies that have a turnover less than 35 million. We find that the procurement through 50% black owned is improving, if very slowly. And the procurement through 30% black women owned is the lowest of all four of the sub-elements of procurement and is a slow mover. Why do we feel that broad-based black economic empowerment on the whole is working? Principally through the procurement mechanism. Procurement within the scorecard is one of two elements that currently carry the highest points of 20 points, same as ownership. And procurement is the internal compliance mechanism within the codes. It is the element that drives measured entities to demand, often, a rating certificate from their underlying suppliers, which in turn then drives that compliance further downstream. And we are seeing that procurement score improving. So that compliance is working. And we find that improved compliance has provided a competitive advantage to those companies that have a better rating. We are certainly seeing it from the big players within industry. And off the top of my head, I think of the retailers. The retailers are very focused on their procurement score and put a lot of pressure on their underlying suppliers to ensure that before they are even brought on board as a supplier, that they are compliant. The requirement now to not just present your ownership credentials, but rather when you're making application to tender to the city or the province or the government, that your B certificate is a requirement as opposed to merely your ownership credentials has made a big difference. There's been a flurry since December when it came into practice that those entities who are wishing to tender are coming to get themselves rated. And there is limited influence from a moral imperative. where do we feel in our experience that broad-based black economic empowerment has failed? We don't feel that there has been a significant improvement in poverty alleviation as a result of the broad-based black economic empowerment codes of good practice. It's not saying that the socioeconomic development element doesn't work. It is certainly, as I mentioned earlier, it is certainly the easiest element in which to score points, in that it is merely a case of providing some support to a charitable organization, and naturally those charitable organizations often rely on that support of corporates. But we haven't seen, we haven't got the feeling of significant amount of poverty alleviation that has been brought about by compliance to the broad-based economic empowerment codes of good practice. Job creation, although there has been, although we do see an improvement in the demographic profile within the employment equity elements, we can't see those figures being driven through to the overall job creation figures in the country as a whole. And tied to this, as I mentioned earlier, that although the compliance and the general points are improving, this doesn't correlate to a requisite improvement in the economic growth within the country as a whole. Why do we feel this is the case? The scorecard as it stands at the moment drives compliance as opposed to performance. And we'll get onto that in the next slide when we measure it. It is companies on the whole are intent on merely complying and getting the points. Not necessarily as to what they are doing from a sustainable or from a growth perspective. It is merely a case of if we can comply and get the points, then we're happy with that. There's some limitations on the ancillary imperatives such as education and access to the economy. There is a great focus on the ownership element. And yes, there has been some global economic turmoil, as we are aware, which has placed pressure on certain companies to drive their B compliance. What is Empowerdex's recommendations to help drive broad-based black economic empowerment, and specifically to include a local procurement aspect to the rating? Three elements must be the focus of the scorecard: skills development, local content procurement, and enterprise development initiatives must become the focus of broad-based black economic empowerment. Currently, enterprise development is a percentage of your net profit after tax. If you're a large company, it's 3% of your net profit after tax. If you're a smaller company, it's 2% of your net profit after tax. So there is no incentive, there is no imperative on a measured entity at the moment to worry about any production improvements within an enterprise development beneficiary of theirs, or any sustainability or any job creation aspects of an enterprise development beneficiary. It is merely an indication of how much money, monetary or non-monetary assistance, they gave to an enterprise development beneficiary at the moment. And if that enterprise development beneficiary isn't there next year, they will find another one and provide 3% of the net profit after tax and would be compliant. And we feel that there must be a change of focus away from the metric of measurement, from purely an ability to be compliant from a spending of a certain amount of money, to sustainability and a local content production or a growth of enterprise development beneficiary aspect. We We need a clear methodology for the calculation of local content, of local procurement. As you said, the SABS technical standard is there, but it's insufficient. And we're starting to see this within the independent power producers, where although they and it's an aspect that we have highlighted and noted, to say that although there is a local content indicator within those independent power producer tenders, we still don't have a clear view as to how we're going to measure that sufficiently. And if we feel that local content aspect is important to drive growth, we need to make sure that we're able to define that sufficiently. And that is a challenge that is in front of us. Likewise, we feel specific and targeted measures of industrialization must be introduced and credit given to companies for facilitating this. Focus must be removed from ownership as a separate element and integrate this measure into local procurement measures. Well, we're not saying get away with ownership. We're not saying do away with ownership. Ownership must still be a measurement in its own right. But we need what we're saying is that we feel that the focus on ownership should not only reside purely in the ownership element, but we should be utilizing that more from a procurement, within the procurement element as well, to drive further improvements in sustainability, productive capacity within companies as well. There should also be collaborative interventions in strategic development areas, as we've seen in the new growth path as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation. I guess it has really opened our eyes, especially our minds, in terms of understanding what we should be looking at when we look at the broad-based black economic empowerment. We also appreciate the fact that you didn't just give us that, you indicated where things are not going right, and you also have recommendations. Thank you very much for that. Members, may we interact with the presentation, please? I'm noting Mr. Hussein, Madam Van der Merwe, Mr. Shema, Mabasa, then to that order, please.
Sure, thank you very much. And let me start by saying thank you very much for the presentation. It's indeed been very interesting. A mixed bag of some good results and some bad results. I want to say, Chair, I think what sticks out very clearly in my mind is that while companies' scores are improving in terms of local procurement, people's lives on the ground is actually not changing. Effectively, that's what it means. And it's interesting that you've made the point that the whole system, it seems to me, is skewed in the way we're managing or measuring the indicators. I have just two or three questions, Chair. And very earlier in your presentation, you talked about an improvement in the increase in local procurement in government departments. I'm just interested to know how did you measure that, and what data you're using to rely upon that determination. The second question I want to ask is that, is there any study or information that you have that suggests that more of the procurement could be shared amongst businesses without having to come through for repeat businesses? In other words, I suspect that part of the problem may be that on enterprise development, for example, a particular company can invest in one business on more than one occasion. And is that the case, or what is your advice on that? Then the last one I want to find out is why is it that you don't you suggest that salaries and taxes are excluded? I mean, is that not a form of investment in local procurement to some extent? And I'm interested to know why is it excluded from it? Thanks.
Thanks, Tessa.
Thank you very much, and thank you for the presentation. And I agree with the colleague who's just spoken that it's both good and bad news. And I think it's a very interesting study for us. And it strikes me that the code and the way in which people are expected to comply is both too complicated and too simple. And I want to know whether you'd agree with me on that statement. Too complicated in that there's a lot of boxes to tick, but too simple in that we are unable to sort of say, if you do this, we're going to have that effect. In other words, the cause and effect is a gray area. It's you know, I mean, the main things that we want to do is alleviate poverty and create jobs and stimulate economic growth, and these are what are listed here as the failures. So there must be a causal relationship between what we're doing and how it's impacting on the ground, and I think that's a little bit worrying. I would like to suggest that on page 7, the second slide, it's not numbered per slide, but it talks about the sector charters and codes. It says that you were talking about how the charters and codes mix directly with the codes that have been devised. And then you say here, this indicates that the role players find the current procurement mechanism to be palatable. Now, I find that a bit worrying. I mean, the question I think is, do we find it palatable, you know, in implementation of policy? And so that's another reason why I say it's perhaps too simple. They simply comply and then everything's okay, but in the end, it's not having the desired effect. I think it's extremely worrying that the compliance is driving the performance, or is driving the behavior rather than the performance. And I think we need to look at ways in which we can prevent that and focus everything on performance and results. I also would like to ask you, please, to explain on page 9, the under recommendations, specific and targeted measures for industrialization must be introduced, the credit given to companies facilitating that. I would just like a little bit more information on that. One last question. When you talk about local procurement, is it identified in any way in the codes and the way you assess it as South African local procurement or local procurement? And we've had this thing in the cooperative bill that we're dealing with in the other committee, which is, are companies forced to source from their region or their town or their province? Is there a measure for that, and is there an advantage for that, or is it simply, if I buy it at the market in Cape Town, then I don't have to worry about whether it's benefiting the community in which I'm operating. So that's my last question. Thank you.
Thanks, Simon. Who was next?
No, thank you, Chair, and good morning to the colleagues. One will first walk in the footsteps of my colleagues who have said that we welcome the report, and it's a mixed bag of good news and bad news, really. I just want to preface what I'm saying by lamenting, you know, what I'm sensing to be high levels of fronting, which I feel are an exploitation, really, of the system, one. And secondly, they are an exploitation of the sufferings of our people. And, of course, this is something that we need to deal with, because essentially the fronting is an act of corruption, which, you know, we need to nip it in the bud. So my question is then, how best, what advice can we receive, can we get on, how best can we deal with this issue of fronting? because it makes it difficult for us to gauge whether BBVE is successful or is a failure, to truly, you know, gauge its successes in the midst of all these other shortcomings. Secondly, I just want to marry skills development and the successes of and failures of BBVE to say, because if you look at the failures that have been listed there of poverty and so on, how far has BBVE gone in stimulating skills development so that we can be able to be in a situation to say that it's addressing all the other challenges in which we are faced with in opening up opportunities, because skills development is essentially an integral part of any economic development system. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. Okay, who's next? Babu Mabasa.
Thank you very much, colleague Chair. I also want to express gratitude on the input made, because the quality of the input made is remarkable and a job well done. And then my first question is, I could not quite understand the sequence in explaining page 4, the bottom structure. So I tried to follow it, but I think I'm missing it somewhere. And then my second question is, I don't know whether I missed it, if it was articulated at all, people with disabilities, have they been covered, and how well are we doing in that regard? I think I didn't get it. And then the as we speak of economic development in the context of triple BEE, to what degree do we try to integrate rural to urban, as well as informal to the formal, because it's we may have unintended consequences of having the status quo remaining the same if our targeting is not very precise. And my next question relates to what has been asked by Member Hlengwa of the impact on, but let me ask it directly and say, from my point of view, the training institutions, to what degree are they sensitive to these needs, these national needs? Because they also have to make input, you know, the courses that they provide, the content must also contribute towards these challenges. And my last one is on the fronting. Are our systems able to detect the fronting where a person becomes a shareholder, artificially so? But that's one point. But my main point is where the person does not participate in the production or in the activities of the entity, but he or she just has a share here, has a share there, is just rotating everywhere, and So that is to the detriment of the intention of triple BEE. So are we able to detect that? And if we do catch such people, are the two parties, is there a punishment for both parties? Because it takes the two to tango in that instance. Thanks, Colleague Chair.
Thanks,
Thanks, Chairperson, and I would like to welcome the presentation.
Chairperson, it makes us to worry. I'm saying this, Chairperson, if you look at the mentality or whatever we do, we seem to be ticking the boxes so that we've done this. And then, but when it comes to impact, in fact, everywhere, you can go to education, you just tick the boxes that we've done this, and then, now, I'm saying, Chairperson, maybe if we do not produce, we do not have the industries, which locally produces some goods, then we rush to check whether it is a local procured or something like that. It means that we need to why can't we produce? Or at least if we are saying we do not have capacity. We've got so many companies, the public enterprises. I'm thinking aloud, can't we use that capacity for this being to say as a public entity or as a public entity, can you give capacity to these companies or to these BBEE? And Chairperson, maybe I'm trying to find out what can we do as South African or as Parliament to try to assist, because if you look at this thing, we are just chasing a mirage. If you can be able to advise us. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Baba Mduli, Baba Mubu. Dada Mubu, Baba Mubasa, you'll be the next.
Thank you, Chair. Man, two short questions that I've already been asked. I just want to sort of maybe underline what I think is the importance of the issues relating to what my colleagues have already mentioned, fronting, the issue of fronting. You said that it's very difficult to measure the fronting, but in your own personal estimation, to what extent do you think fronting is within the triple BEE? How far do you think it goes, in other words? But secondly, maybe related to that is, to what extent do you think BEE and local procurement are catalysts for corruption? I hope you understand what I'm saying, in particular as regards to fronting and also in tendering processes. Thanks.
Thank you. Babu Kofasa?
Yeah. Chairperson, I want to go to the second page, the second slide. If you look at the snapshot, the triple BEE on JSE, looks very impressive. But as you go through the whole briefing, one gets the sense that whoever we have brought in as part of the triple BEE are people who have either been there before on their own, and now they are coming in as BEE, as economic empowerment, or people who have been employed elsewhere and have moved into what is called black economic empowerment. It doesn't give the sense that we have tapped into the new person from college or university or from high school. It just doesn't give that impression. I do want to get a sense from the presenter whether in their investigation they're seeing new entrants into the economic sphere. Through BEE, because if that is not the case, then we are simply circulating people who have always been economically active, and therefore we are not moving forward, and it is worrying. Perhaps if one were to say that, to identify a shortcoming in this presentation, it is precisely that. And could it be clarified to say, if it is possible for the presenters to go back and come back with that kind of information. The you are saying in slide 5 that there is a correlation between the improving scorecards. There is no correlation between the improving scorecards and economic development generally in the country. What are the implications thereof? Because one doesn't get the sense as well that when we speak of people who have been economically empowered, one doesn't get the sense that there is a way of saying, given this number of black people who have been empowered, who have small businesses and are thriving, this is the percentage of the GDP they are contributing into the country, and therefore we are moving forward. Can that be explained, please?
thank you very much, Methodist. Is your hand up or you playing with your finger? Okay, the presenter did actually explain that when he said it, the contradiction that are there. But I think for your benefit, because you arrived a bit late, perhaps you could come back to that. Colleagues, triple BEE is an intervention, supposed to be an intervention by government in order to try and bring the previously disadvantaged into participating actually into the economy and try to reverse some of the things that were done by the apartheid system before. And it's really worrisome that the situation is still not, I'm just worried, especially about the non-availability of information in as far as small business and small animation businesses are concerned. I'm not sure how, apart from getting info from the JSE, how can we ensure that we get, because there's no recommendation on that, how to ensure that we get that kind of information and we are able also to evaluate as to how far do we go in really bringing in this the sectors that I'm talking, the sector that I'm talking about. I'm aware that the Empower Desk is doing a lot from a private point of view. This is your contribution towards assisting the country in gauging whether we are moving forward or not. I'm also aware that you're working with the DTI. So it is important also that perhaps you begin to work on that front. And, you know, the fact that your presentation today is focusing on local content, which I think that's why members are asking a lot of questions in relation to, I think, preferential procurement rather than local content issues. Because local content issues to me suggest that we have already moved in as far as issues of manufacturing is concerned. We've developed even further the issues around industrialization of industries. Hence, enterprises, so large enterprises in the country are able, therefore, or to distribute within South Africa or even going even abroad. Hence, you are saying we are able, the government is interacting a lot in that regard, of which I'll be interested in the response that you are giving to the question that was asked by one member in that regard. Where you feel that BBBEE has failed, especially in relation to poverty alleviation, I just want to get there because from the face value, when you look at things, you find that many people who were disadvantaged before were able, you know, to move from the worst scenario to the better scenario. Of course, you are mentioning here that because of lack of skills, lack of education and so forth, they are not able to manage whatever gains that they might have acquired. But I just want to make us understand deeper as to how do you relate to that to families of those who might have, for instance, benefited from the BEE itself. The illustration could be maybe not today, maybe as a way of coming back to us, just to get us where were we in 1996 and where are we today in as far as poverty alleviation amongst those who seem to have participated in the BBBEE. Yeah. Thank you. I'll give you an opportunity for responses, but if you feel you still have, you still want to organize yourself, we can just break for 5 minutes and allow you to respond after. Which is which? Come again?
I'll now.
You will? Okay, thank you very much. Over to you. Okay.
Thank you very much. I hope I've made notes correctly as we've gone, but if I'm not exactly answering your question and giving you a view, then please come back to me. And what I'll do is I'll give you my view as far as my interpretation is. But what I will do, and I have been asked to go away and think about a few things, is that I will go and together with Vuyo Jackana Rajaratnam and Stephen Hawes, put some information together again so that we can submit that back to you again. Right. The first one, it was a question as to skew to the measurement. Yeah, at the moment, the way the interpretation of the scores as far as the codes are concerned is that, the way that it's measured at the moment drives compliance. And what I'll do is I'll probably be a number of questions touched on each other, so we might well touch on the same issues. But, it certainly is a challenge that at the moment the measurement of broad-based black economic empowerment is really what drives the compliance, rather than the underlying assistance and the underlying measures that are going in to assist. State-owned enterprises, what I was saying there was the procurement element provides for the ability to exclude purchases from state-owned entities. I wasn't saying that we've seen improved procurement through state-owned entities. What I was saying was we're now advising clients not to exclude procurement from state-owned entities because they actually are getting their own ratings. And most of them are good, level 2. So it actually makes no sense to exclude it at level 4 when you could actually include it at level 2 and get enhanced recognition. So what I was saying was we're starting to see those state-owned enterprises get their own ratings. And there is a special scorecard that can keep an eye for state-owned enterprises. Enterprise development beneficiaries in the investment and the measurement of the, at the moment, the way the measurement is the way the enterprise development element is measured is assistance given to an enterprise development beneficiary, irrespective of how that assistance is. There is a long list. There's an enterprise development matrix that will give you certain weightings towards assistance given to it, one of which is investments in enterprise development beneficiaries. My personal, and I've been, I've signed off and reviewed plenty of files, investment in enterprise development beneficiaries is very seldom seen from the files that I've seen. It's normally assistance given to them, often from a financial basis, often from a human resource capacity. But pure investments, at the moment there's no differentiation between them. It's just one of the potential enterprise development initiatives one can do. And enterprise development initiatives of, in fact, the codes talk about, say right at the top, this is a non-exhaustive list of enterprise development beneficiaries, initiatives. Enterprise development initiatives are any initiatives that is at the moment that assist enterprise development beneficiaries operationally or financially that is outside your normal business practice. So if I had to give an indication of how many of them were pure investments, I would say very few at the moment. Most of them are financial, and a company will determine what they need to spend, and they'll either pay them in a short period. And I'm not saying these aren't worthwhile. From a small business perspective, cash flow is an issue. So most of them are perfectly assist an enterprise development beneficiary, but most of them don't have any measurement that determines the sustainability and the long-term growth of that business. And again, it goes back to your previous question, is it the measurement that drives the compliance? And I would say, yes, it is the measurement that drives the compliance. The salaries exclusion on the preferential procurement, when I can hear your point, that, isn't that not an investment? The reason behind having it as an exclusion what we're trying to do is we're trying to drive down, and I'll get onto it when we explain the total measure procurement spend calculation again. What we're trying to do is we're trying to determine your total measured procurement spend, which will give us a base from which to measure procurement that you could have done through a company that's got a BE certificate. Okay, so we're trying to determine a base called your total measured spend, and then we're measuring, from those suppliers that you could have utilized, how many of them did you utilize that had a BE certificate at whatever level it is? And the reason we're excluding salaries is you're not going to go to your employees and say, can I see your BE certificate? Even though technically they could be because they're earning less than 5 million a year probably. But if you've got 1,000 employees, they're not all going to have a BE. That's why it's excluded. And I don't discount potentially saying, there you have it as an exclusion. However, There is another measurement within the codes, which is called your evaluating supplier calculation, which does take into account your cost of employment. And it gives you enhanced recognition. So you'll see in a certificate this concept called evaluating supplier. And there's a calculation that goes on behind there, and one of the elements in that calculation is your salary bill. So it gives you enhanced recognition for those companies who are quite employee intensive. So it is measured elsewhere. But the reason why we exclude it is because we won't ask. The same reason why we exclude imports, because you're not going to go to somebody in China and say, can I have your BE certificate? So that's why the exclusion is there, because we're trying to measure people that you could have purchased from that have BE certificates. Okay. The question on is compliance too complex and too easy? I think you're right. I think it is complex. The larger you, the organization, so over 35 million rand, there are more hoops to jump through, and you know, that carries some form of cost in that complexity. But to a large extent, it is, again, goes back to the measurement. It is meet the requirements. And there has been discussion, I'll get on to now, there has been discussion between, when we look at enterprise development and socioeconomic development, on the concept of annual versus cumulative recognition. And it's a different discussion. I can give you my views on it, but view is an annual compliance will become even more of a tick box exercise. A company will not help beyond what they have to do. Realistically, if a company only needs to spend 3% of their net profit after tax, and it's assumed that that measurement is still the correct measurement, if they're getting no recognition going forward, the likelihood is they're going to tick that box and they're going to move on, irrespective of what happens to that entity. If they're not there the next year, they'll find another one. Which means, and it goes on to your point of industrialization and in the way towards your enterprise development investment question, a company won't invest in a company beyond what they need to do in order to help them through that growth, that startup growth phase. Which is why, at the moment, our view is that cumulative recognition should still be in place. In that, without it, it's going to lead to a tick box exercise. And yes, it is too easy in certain instances. But is that a bad thing? As I said earlier, socioeconomic development is very easy to get points. You write a check on the 29th of February 2012 for 1% of your net profit after tax. And I've seen plenty of them on the 29th of February. My counter question to that is, does that make a difference to the socioeconomic development beneficiaries who survive on that donation? Does it really matter if it's on the 29th of February or if it's on whatever date it is? I think we've got to be very wary about taking away a socioeconomic development focus just because it's too easy. I don't think the fact that it's too easy is necessarily a bad thing. If we take away socioeconomic development, a lot of the charitable organizations will collapse. And poverty alleviation will suffer even more. The question really should be, is that element meeting its requirements? And it perhaps needs to be looked at. And I'll go back and consider amongst other, I don't want to try and give you an answer, and I know it comes down later, on poverty alleviation. And to try and come back with some kind of view as to why we feel that it's not doing what it should be doing. I just, personally, and I know it's an empathic view as well, we've got to be very careful about taking something away just because it's too easy. Because it really does mean, it really is important to those charities who receive that assistance. As I mentioned, yeah, the codes at the moment don't measure the effect. They measure the compliance. They measure whether you met the requirements or not. And it's a theme that's been running throughout the presentation we've given. That it's a fairly narrow, especially on skills development, preferential procurement, enterprise development, and socioeconomic development, that are measured on a narrow one-year time horizon. It's a narrow definition of what's being measured, and it's a compliance. If we do it, we get the score. And perhaps the focus should be placed on sustainability beyond that narrow horizon. You asked a question with regards to the palatability of procurement per the sector code. Yeah, what we're trying to say there is that industry role players in, or companies within industry have obviously found the procurement requirements to their they're in agreement with the procurement requirements, and are they going to ask to do something more difficult than they need to do? I think what we're trying to say there is they feel that the current way that we measure procurement, that they're fine with that. The question we should be asking is, are we measuring it the right way? You know, as far as the scores are concerned and the fact that the performance is improving, again, it's becoming an imperative if you want to interact or want to do business with government, be it at local, provincial or national level, that you've got to have a BE certificate. So that's compliance. In order to, you've got two reasons why you needed a BE certificate. Either you want to interact with government, or it's a business. It's a business imperative for you. You're a supplier to a major retailer. They will say, well, I'm not going to put you on my supplier database unless you have a BE certificate. So that requirement for compliance has driven the improvement in your performance. Industrialization, we touched on what we're saying there is that, there was a question about enterprise development later as well. What we're saying is that there should be more focus placed on the development of businesses as opposed to merely the fact that you give 3% of your net profit after tax to assist a business. Industrialization, development of smaller businesses will in turn go to bigger businesses should perhaps be a better metric than merely a percentage of your net profit after tax as it is stated at the moment. As far as local procurement is concerned, there is no measurement for local procurement. It is one of the requirements in the independent power producers aspect where they are measuring as far as their local content perspective is concerned. Again, not within their procurement ones, as far as I can remember. In the local content, they are measuring with procurement within your local community. At the way the codes are written and at the moment, it makes no difference if you in the Western Cape and you purchase something from somebody in Epping, or if you purchase the same thing from somebody in Gauteng. It makes no difference. If it's a small business and you have a certificate for a small business, it will be recognized in the same way. So there's no weighting at all on the local aspects. And there's a question later with regards to rural to urban. And a similar answer stands there, that as far as procurement is concerned at the moment, there is no differentiation between rural procurement versus urbanized procurement. However, it does come into play as far as ownership is concerned, where it becomes one of the designated groups. And there's a number of designated groups that are recognizable from an ownership perspective, and there are a couple of points. I have seen very, very, very seldom ownership that relates to rural or the unemployed. And if the designated groups are those living in rural areas, the unemployed, the youth, so under 35, we measure women separately. We measure women separately within it. But where we and then employee ownership schemes and board-based ownership schemes. And where we see most of the points for ownership under those designated groups on broad-based ownership schemes, employee ownership schemes, and the youth, normally because you advise a director or a shareholder, do you know that you're recognizable as a youth, as opposed to it being an actual initiative to go out and give ownership to somebody. It's normally a bit of a surprise to them. Oh, by the way, do you know that you qualify? And I've yet to see very, very, very. I can probably think of one or two where there's been some trust. We are seeing it more now with these independent power producers as well. Is that they normally have a trust set up in the local community, but as far as the codes of good practice are devised at the moment, very, very little is actually coming back from the rural aspect.
Please raise your
Would you like to break for 5 minutes while people get tea?
Get cold, and that would be tantamount to wasteful expenditure.
The next question, and it was raised a few times, was with regards to fronting, and the complexity behind it, and the challenge that we are faced with from a verification agency perspective is that we're required to verify the authenticity of a company, and we do that via a number of measures, including interviews with the shareholders, as well as the registration documentation of that particular entity. And we will keep all of that evidence on file, including certified IDs and Core 39, as they are now. And if all of those match up, then that person is a beneficial owner, a shareholder within the company, and we look at shareholders' agreements, and we look at those to determine whether the voting rights and the economic interest accrue to the shareholders in the percentage in which they hold shares. And if all of those are in play, then we determine the ownership. The problem with fronting is that it occurs beyond that. It occurs further down the supply chain, in that a BE compliant company, might well receive that tender. The question really is who ultimately carries out. That's where it comes into play. I can't recall an instance where I haven't been comfortable with the information that's been presented to me and the evidence that we've had on file with regards to the ownership of the entity. So it often doesn't occur at that point. It often occurs further downstream when it comes to the actual implementation of that tender. And I'm not saying it's only tender, sorry. But further downstream when operationally that company is required to carry out an initiative. It's very difficult to pinpoint. And as I said, it's a grave allegation. It really is a grave allegation and you've got to be absolutely convinced in your mind that it is fronting before a verification agency will go out there and say so, because it is a grave allegation and it will have consequences. As far as declaring it, I've never had the experience of requiring to declare it. I will find out what the process is. There is a process. There were regulations that came out recently, which placed an onus on, and it came from the DTI, placed an onus on verification agencies to report, and verification agencies could be jailed for incorrectly declaring that a company was black-owned. But that would be willfully declaring something that you didn't, that you were aware of wasn't the case, and you still said that was black-owned. So there is some penalty, but the reality of fronting from a verification perspective is that we are looking at the legal makeup and the evidence behind that. And if that is all in place, and we have interviewed, and we're required to interview the shareholders, we're required to follow the source until we find a person. So rating agencies, verification agencies will follow that trail until we finally find the owner and interview them. And if all of that is in place, it's very difficult to highlight. And that provides the challenge with it.
Just make a follow-up on that, Duncan. There was a case in this province, Western Cape, wherein one of the shareholders was said to be a black lady who was working for the CEO or managing director of that particular company, but had to make that helper to sign documents as a shareholder. Are you not able to detect such incidences or in your evaluation of real shareholders against those that are not? For instance, a company would be said it's black women owned, only to find that it's just ranting. I mean, that's a, it seems like an easy case, but I'm trying to understand how you work, how to detect, how to evaluate such cases.
Yeah, we, as a verification agency, we are required to not only collect evidence, registration papers, certified IDs, shareholders agreements and the likes, but we're also required to interview and interview the person, and we ask them questions with regards to their input and with regards to their shareholding, when they acquired shareholding, the value of their outstanding liabilities. And we're also required to give we're required to carry professional skepticism, and we're required to give our professional opinion. And specifically now that there is an added onus and there's an added deterrent for verification agencies, that if they willfully declare something that they know is not correct, they will likely be charged, and they can potentially, I think it's up to 10 years in jail. But one needs to physically interview the shareholder as well, and one should go into that interview with a sense of professional skepticism to make sure that they actually are carrying out the roles of a shareholder. But it's difficult. I'm aware of one case in KwaZulu-Natal where all of the documentation was there. And paperwork was done, and then shareholders were interviewed and the likes, and it turned out that further downstream that they were doing it on behalf of somebody else. It is very difficult. It is very difficult to unequivocally say that is fronting. And what I'll do is I'll go back and see if we can't come up with some form of suggestions as to how it could potentially be. All verification agencies are required to follow not only the verification manual but Standards R47 documentation, which talks about confidentiality and impartiality and all that stuff. So all verification agencies will follow the same set guidelines as to how to carry out a verification. And the gazetted verification manual tells us exactly what we are required to do from a verification of ownership, in addition to all the other elements as well. There was a question with regards to skills development, and how has skills development done? In my experience, skills development is one of the worst performing elements. Specifically with, in that, again, it is a measurement of a time from one point in your, from the beginning of your financial year to the end of your financial year. At the end of the last day of your financial year, you in essence wipe the slate clean and you start again the next day. At the moment, it's 3% of your levyable amount, but we highlighted it earlier in the presentation where management control, employment equity, and skills development are the most underperforming if we balance it against the rest of the elements. Management control and employment equity. The way skills development is calculated at the moment is three different sub-elements: skills development expenditure on all employees, skills development expenditure on black disabled employees, and then what's known as learnerships or category B, C, or D courses. I'll touch on the disabled one at the same time, because disabled representation within the scorecard is very low. Most instances, I would say more than 50% of the cases, and we only measure disabled representation at a generic company level, so over 35 million rand. I would say over 50% of generic companies that I review score nothing for disabled employees, in both employment equity and therefore in and Some of it is industry specific, and we, if we look at the mining companies, say the likelihood is that they can incorporate disabled staff more than likely within their admin functions, not necessarily within their operational functions. And we do need to take into account that there is industry limitations sometimes. But what we should then hope to see is that as the sector codes are gazetted, that those challenges and those constraints are addressed within those sector codes. But skills development generally is a poor performer. We are starting to see an improvement in learnership and what's known as category B, C, and D employees. In essence, the number of employees that are going through a formal learnership or a mixed mode delivery, where there's a theoretical component coupled with a practical component as well. And my feeling, and I can go back and look at the empirical data, is that that learnership category is starting to improve, which touches on one of the other questions talking about the training institutions. I don't think that there is a lack of course content being put out there by the training institutions. I would propose that there's a lack of application from the measured entities on skill development, in that it is quite an onerous, the bigger your salary bill goes. 3% of your levyable amount, if you've got a, if you've got a billion rand turnover, that's 30 million rand that you've got to spend on training, with a limitation on internal training. So the view, my view is that, companies are potentially saying they're easier points to get on a scorecard rather than skills development. We do tend to find the bigger companies who have got a dedicated training, and once you get to a certain size of company, there tends to be a dedicated training manager. Those larger organizations often do score well. Smaller companies invariably don't use skills development as one of the four elements they use, and the companies just going into the generic levels generally score poorly. And we've, highlighted earlier that, it is an area that does need some focus. We had a question on procurement and the calculation for it. I'll just run you through it again very quickly. What we're looking to do is we're looking to take the cost of operating your business, so all the expenditure that you incur during the year, generally consists of four figures. Your cost of sales, if you're in an industry that purchases goods to either value add and so on, cost of sales, operating expenditure, capital expenditure, and finance costs. 95% of the time, those are the costs that, you would incur, that a measured entity would incur during the course of the year. And from that, we take away certain items. Principally those items where you wouldn't be able to get a BE certificate, because what we're trying to do is we're trying to get to a denominator, total measured spend, from which you could have, if you so wished, have procured from somebody from a supplier with a BE certificate. So we take off depreciation, we take off loss and foreign exchange differences, we take off salaries and wages, we take off imports, provided that the evidence is there to show that that you had an import license and that you were importing. If you look in the code, there's quite an extensive list of exclusions that can take place. And we eventually get to this total measured procurement spend, which is the base against which we measure your compliance with procuring from suppliers that have got a BE certificate at their recognised level. So if it's level 2 and you spend 100 rand, you recognize 125 rand. Okay. We had asked about disabilities and how well that was going, and as I've said, disabilities is a poor performer. And it's worth 5 points on the scorecard, 2 points in employment equity and 3 points in skills development. General rule is that most generic companies would lose those 5 points. There are some companies who perform well, but on the whole, it is a poor indicator.
2 of 100.
It's 2 out of 100 points. So it's 2 in employment equity and 3 in skills development, because one of the sub-elements we measure is expenditure on black disabled employees as a percentage of your levyable amount. So it's 5 points in total on the scorecard for disabled employees. There was a question on rural to urban and informal to formal, as mentioned earlier. Other than in ownership, where you can get some recognition as part of a designated group, which I've very seldom seen, ownership within rural or underdeveloped areas, there is no specific requirement in the codes as they stand to measure local procurements. What we do know is that the revisions and the proposed revisions that will be coming out for the codes of good practice will include a portion on local content. And we feel that that's the right way to go. There was another question on fronting with regards to the systems and the ownership shareholding versus the input and operations. Again, it's difficult because you can have an ownership stake in a business, but you don't necessarily have to have any operational involvement. It can merely be an investment stake. And there's nothing wrong with that, to have an investment stake within an entity. And we see it quite often that there is a number of shareholders within a company, of which a couple of them might be involved in the actual day-to-day management of it. So it's difficult to determine whether that ownership stake, without any operational involvement, is fronting, because it can just be, well, I'm working at a company, I've got some spare money, I take an investment position in another company. I think to try and draw a parallel between the fact that there is ownership without operational involvement and that by some way is fronting, I think it would be a difficult connection to make. What I would be more interested in is to try and determine whether there was ownership as a whole claimed in a measured entity and whether that measured entity was actually able to do what they said they would do further downstream. There was a question with regards to the capacity for local production of certain industries. I think we all, I feel as if we need to have some imports. We don't want to manufacture everything locally. So some imports are fine, but I think the focus should be on those industries where we can procure, where we can manufacture locally and are currently importing, that we should be placing focus on that, and whether we're utilizing some of the capacity of the larger state-owned enterprises or the likes, we should be focusing. The way it's measured at the moment, though, is it's take off the imports and then we measure the procurement through that company who's got a B certificate or not. So there's no real focus, and it goes to our question that we've had all along about there needs to be more focus on the local content aspect of it. Back to the question of fronting again. And what extent is there from a subcontract, as I said, it's very difficult to give some indication as to the I don't have numbers available to me as to what the extent is. I will gladly go away and see if we can try and come back with some figures. But I reiterate, it's a very complex and difficult aspect to highlight. And the feeling is that it doesn't necessarily occur at the measured entity. It's difficult to measure the measured entity level. It will tend to occur in the subcontracting space. And as far as tendering and the corruption aspects that are involved in that, I don't have evidence available to me, and I can't really comment on the corruption aspects within the tendering space. Although again, I will make an effort to try and see if we can get some evidence, some information on that. As far as the snapshot of the JSC is concerned, yeah, that is a measurement of what the compliance and the figures show to us. And as we've said throughout the presentation, it's as a result of the way it's measured more than anything else. And measurement at the moment is done on a compliance basis as opposed to necessarily a sustainability or growth basis. As far as employment equity and the take-up of graduates, we are seeing an improvement. As I mentioned earlier, we are seeing an improvement in the junior management category, which includes graduate professionals, technically qualified junior management superintendents, foremen. So I think the fact that we're seeing an improvement at junior management level shows that there is some improvement occurring. Do I have raw data as to say how many graduates there were in 2007 that were able to find a job relatively easily compared to 2012? I don't have that data, but I will see if we can find some data on that. What I do know is that the tourism sector code has an element within its socioeconomic development, that measures the percentage of black new recruits with no prior work experience. It's the only one I've seen so far that has brought into measurement space and gives points for the employment of black graduates, black employees with no prior work experience. It doesn't speak specifically to graduates, but it does at least measure the percentage of black employees that you are bringing into your workforce who have got no prior work experience. There was a question with regards to enterprise development and how was it producing new businesses as opposed to merely shuffling the deck and helping existing businesses. If I look at the review that I've done, on the whole, enterprise development has assisted existing businesses and hasn't necessarily driven the generation of new businesses. And again, it is a measurement that could be brought into place to say, and my understanding is that there might well be a component of that in the new code that talks about the creation of new businesses. At the moment, the interpretation is that most of the enterprise development beneficiaries are existing businesses who are now just receiving assistance. I have seen a fair amount of new businesses being created, and the intention of enterprise development is to bring people into work and then ultimately spin off some of those to generate new businesses because they in turn will employ more people. But the feeling at the moment is that those enterprise development businesses are, on the whole, existing businesses. The non-correlation of the increase in the preferential procurement performance and the economy as a whole, and what's the outcome of this? Well, I think the outcome of this is showing that it's not necessarily serving the intention of what the Codes of Good Practice was all about. And the intention of the Codes of Good Practice, one of the underlying intentions, is to try and move people out of the informal economy into the formal economy. And I think what the evidence shows is that despite the fact that the procurement figures are improving, we aren't seeing a requisite improvement in the economic growth as a whole. So the mere fact that procurement is improving perhaps means we're not measuring it the right way. Socioeconomic development, poverty alleviation, again, much like enterprise development, socioeconomic development is a percentage of your net profit after tax. So it is a rand amount aren't clear on aspects such as social wages, but we do see more and more that a social wage concept is getting measured at socioeconomic development. And what I'm meaning there is it's either an employee of yours that is getting some assistance over and above their cost to company, or more likely now, and we see quite a few of it, is that companies are starting to assist family members of employees, which compensate to help them to study, or to pay their schooling, or to give them a bursary to university or some other higher institute of learning, which can't be skills development because they're not an employee, the child of the employee is not an employee. And we're starting to see more and more of that. So I think companies are looking at other ways to achieve socioeconomic development, although it's slow going. On the whole, it is a donation that is made to a charity, and normally towards the end of the year, of that financial year. And that's because a company needs to determine what their net profit after tax figure is going to be. As for the report, I think the last question I had was the reporting from a small business perspective. Yeah, it's very difficult to get information because small business, at the moment, as far as I'm aware, is not compelled to report their BE score. We even find larger companies are sometimes reticent to put their BE score up, certain companies, in the public domain, whereas other companies are very happy to. So we tend to find that the reason why we use the JSE listed information is we tend to find that those companies have it in their annual reports. There are top 100 company surveys that take place. But I go back to the beginning of the presentation where we've also got to recognize that there is a positive bias because we're talking to those people who are keen to be compliant.
Thank you very much. And what about the joint venture? In a joint venture, you're not able to detect whether we are bringing in the small enterprises.
We're seeing more and more joint ventures.
In terms of empowerment and in terms of, you know, movement from that level to the next level.
We're seeing more and more joint ventures, normally set up for a particular project, and now, and we've got a, and the way we measure it is slightly different depending on whether we're talking construction, because they've got a specific set of rules, and other joint ventures. The joint ventures that I have seen and been involved in, the ones that I've seen, the underlying entities generally have had some black ownership within them anyway. And I don't know if I've answered your question.
It's okay, Duncan. You know, I realize your limitation is that we were very specific in, you know, what we requested from you, that you should focus on local procurement. I think perhaps next time we'd request you to even become more broader in terms of, you know, the information that you're providing us with. In as far as what we requested from you, really, we feel you have done, you know, your part. And the information provided has really satisfied us. I don't know whether we covered all of us. I guess so. What's left is for us to thank you very much for really coming to share your work with us and giving us your perspective of things. That is really beneficial to us because we're going to be using that information in our general work. And as I said, you've really opened our eyes in as far as, you know, how certain things that we're taking for granted that are being done correctly are not done. And we now know where to focus when we, you know, encounter certain reports, for instance, in as far as performance is concerned. Thank you very much for the information, and you may be released. On the outstanding information, Duncan, will you be able to send this through to our secretary? Okay. Thanks very much. Members, we are aware that we're having a memorial service at first 12. Comrade Mbili's memorial service. So we just wanted to indicate to you that we have the oversight report that we should be dealing with, or I think in the next meetings that we'll be having. Secondly, is the issue of the program. I just want Tando to deal specifically with this month's one, so that while we're looking at the rest of the program, the main management has not said, you know, to look into the proposed program we're going to sit. And then afterwards, we'll then bring it to your attention. Can you just give us the program up to the end of this month? Okay. Members, today the committee has dealt with a briefing by EmpowerDex. Next week, on the 14th, initially the 14th and the 15th were set for Women's Parliament, but now the parliamentary program has changed. So there is a slot for next week, and the committee will have to slot something for next week. And then the week after, which is Tuesday, the 21st of August, it's briefing by NEDLAC on local procurement, and it's a joint meeting with the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry. The week after the 21st, which is the 28th, was supposed to be a briefing by the department and IDC on CIFA's strategic plan, but I received a letter this morning indicating that CIFA is not available on the 28th. Board members are not available on the 28th. They will only be available on the 11th of September. So on the 28th, the committee will also need to change the agenda for the 28th of August. Thanks, Tando. I think the issue of CIFA is really making us. I think we need to clarify it with the minister now, because we've been waiting for their full threat plan, and they seem to be postponing. We understand the challenges that they may be facing, but at the same time, they're delaying our program. It's like we're going back and forth when it comes to CIFA now. They were supposed to have tabled by now their stretch plan, as promised, but still, it's like, you know, they were supposed to be here last week, the week before last, they were not. We had to change still, and now they want to tell us that they won't be available still on the 28th, because remember, this is towards the end of the second term in September, And if we don't deal with them, then we will face challenges in as far as our BRRR is concerned. But nevertheless, I think we have to bring it to the attention of the minister now, because at any rate, the department is still responsible. I hope the department people are listening. We also expecting to be having a briefing from the HSRC and the FFC on the impact of the public infrastructure investment on job creation, poverty, and income inequality. I think that is so far agreed to be held on the 5th of September. We're hoping there are no changes from their side. We'll also make sure that communication to them is tracked. HSRC had already agreed. I think the FFC will still be followed up. Yeah, I think that is that, and we will find something for the 14th because we had left it for the Women's Parliament, which was initially scheduled for the 14th. Now that it's been changed to the end of the month, we have to find something and make a proposal to the management for that. Otherwise, if there are any questions, members can use the opportunity to on the NGP, okay. The general NGP. Because if you look at it, we are really focusing on different areas. We last time were focusing on infrastructure. We're still continuing local procurement. We come into the industrial. Yes. Okay. You need a broad overview. That's fine. We can look into that.
For local procurement.
With a specific focus on the accords, perhaps also, so that the general accords, all five of them. I think we'll do so. We'll look at how we do that. Yeah, I think that is the, that brings us, Mr. Mubu, you wanted to say something?
Yes, Chair, I don't know how whether this makes sense or not, but I was going to suggest, I know that one of the concerns that we have for economic development is regional economic intervention, and the role of SADC maybe in that regard. To what extent do you think we can have a presentation from SADC, some such presentation that will give us an idea of how economic integration is happening in the region? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you for that. We'll look into that. At any rate, I think there was a proposal that we also come up with the forum for economic development. I think it came when we met with Zimbabwe. We still have not followed. We made it as our recommendation to one of our reports. We've also brought that to the attention of the International Relations House Chair. We're hoping that that will be implemented because I think she agrees with the suggestion. Because it was felt that we don't have a forum where we share and share experiences and ideas as a cluster, economic cluster. So we'll look into that. Thank you very much. If there's no other contribution, can we then come to the closure of the meeting? Let me thank you very much for really honoring the invitation to the meeting and also for your participation. We will meet next week, Tuesday, when we deal with the... Is it the net like next week, yeah. Or when we look at the issues that we'll be dealing with, we will communicate to members because we had thought that next week is open. We'll communicate to members as to what exactly we'll be doing after consultation with the role players. Thank you very much. The meeting's been adjourned.